Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip. Trip. Triple.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
Brought to you by Duffy's Beer, our commercial-free 10 a.m. hour as always. Coming off the Steelers Roundtable, I'm always in the mood to talk a little football, a little Steelers football guy, even if the Steelers are on a bye week. And the guys were talking here the last hour about some of the particulars. I got a topic to get to here, and that is players that have exceeded your expectations so far. But before we get to that, 6-4 at the bye week. Are most fans happy? Are they satisfied? Are they feeling like this team has, in fact, been fortunate to get to 6-4. Do you feel pretty good about your position in the AFC?
I don't think most fans are happy from what they expected at the beginning of the year, but considering what the team has faced in general, the offense has not done what we thought it was going to do because of the injuries. I mentioned the other day they have the second most points in the AFC now, which kind of snuck up on you. But I think the defense has been a pleasant surprise. So I think if you really consider the circumstances of what's happened since training camp, I think most people are satisfied. I think most people expected a little bit more. I think the team expected a little bit more when the season kicked off in New England.
Tim was just out in the foyer talking to the roundtable guys.
We had a foyer.
Yeah.
Is that what we call that?
That's what we're calling it, yeah.
I thought it was the lobby.
The green room. About the number of times this organization, Tim, has had three quarterbacks play in the first – well, just in the regular season, and they've all come up with victories. That's been a signature of this team. Landry's won a game. Your boy Mike Vick's won a game. Of course, Ben has come in, and although he's only finished two wins, I guess, he's obviously been very good at times. And you came up with three other Steelers teams where that's happened?
Well, at least one. 2010 it happened. And then we're trying to figure out, we know at least two occurred in 2005 and 2004. I was trying to go back through the archives very quickly. That's why I'm still getting set up here.
Well, see, I don't find that quite as surprising. That's more surprising than when it can happen now because they're more quarterback reliant than they really have been almost at any time in their history, even with Terry Bradshaw here. They were a much more run-oriented, defense-oriented team, and if you had to replace the quarterback, you could get by with
Didn't
it.
Matter.
When you get to the point where Ben is your key player and you can still win replacing him, I think you're doing something there.
Shit, there's another one. Bradshaw, Gilliam and Kruzek all win one in the same year? Or did they not overlap?
I don't think Gilliam won any that year. Bradshaw got hurt, and I think Kruzek played the rest until he got – I don't think Gilliam was in the mix that year, but I'm not positive.
But there's one where there's at least two more.
Okay, so it's not
there might
that
be
rare.
A hand-ratty Bradshaw-Gilliam one.
Yeah, you know.
But to Guy's point, maybe Ben is more of a – you know, more important to this team than Bradshaw was to that team with that great defense. Well, two-parter here. Are you happy that the team is 6-4 if you're a fan of the team? And do you just in general find them likable? Tim, you were on Brand Z last night talking about Antonio Bryant. He's been kind of a theme of the week. His front flip, his perceived arrogance by some people, they don't like that, too selfish. We have Martavis Bryant, who started the year on the marijuana suspension. We've had a lot of Mike Mitchell talk about his behavior on field after plays, before plays are over. We've had Mike Vick, of course, come into some controversy with why they even signed him. Even if you're not a fan of this team, do you find them likable? Like, I'm not a Pitt fan, but I do enjoy watching this year's version of the Pitt football team.
They're a significantly less likable bunch than that group that we just saw come back from 2005.
Less likable.
Significantly, yes. Because that struck me, actually, while I was in that locker room waiting for the guys to finish their photo op, just looking around. I was like, I liked a lot of these guys. When you
Maybe you're just older and more bitter.
I probably am, but at the same time, I also remember distinctly walking into that 2004-2005 locker room and on any given day thinking you could go to player X, player Y, player Z and get something good. There have been multiple...
Hokie, Kiesel, Big Snack, I mean, they were all
Porter,
pretty funny, pretty quotable, pretty...
Hagen,
I don't
Hines,
think this is a
Bettis,
bad team to cover, but that was a pretty good
Parker.
Group of guys. I remember standing on the field to do the post-game TV show in Detroit. And you're hoping you can get some guests because everybody in the networks are grabbing guests. The players want to celebrate. And Hokie comes up and puts his arms around us and starts talking. We didn't even have to go get him. I mean, I don't know that you'd have a guy on the team to do that today.
I don't find this team unlikable, but I think the guys that could be unlikable are getting by because they're performing well at the moment. Like, if things go poorly for this team and Mitchell doesn't play very well, things will turn on him quick. things could turn on Antonio Brown quick if he starts to drop balls. We don't see that coming. He's a great talent. But, yeah, it seems
Well, I think way too many people forget about him dropping a touchdown pass that cost the Baltimore game as much as the miss. Everybody wants to blame that game on Scobie, and rightfully so. If he catches that, all that he's done all year. And because, look, if you're a star for 10 years and you make one mistake, you're going to get away with it. If you're a new guy here and you blow a game against your most heated rival, you're going to get blamed for it. But you want him to be 7-3 and feel a whole lot better going into the bye? Have him hold on to that ball.
That's a good point. Yeah, and
I'm inclined to take whatever side of this argument that you're going to take and go on the opposite because you've aligned yourself with my arch rival, Dr. Chow, in our online Twitter.
Did you see that they were observing him for internal organ injuries? I'm as good as Dr. Chow.
Who was observing him?
Holy Mata. I said yesterday, if they're observing him, it's not a broken bone or anything. He already had an x-ray. If he stayed in hospital or observing him, he might have an organ laceration or internal bleeding. That's exactly what they were looking at him for.
But he doesn't have
that. I am now equal with Dr. Chow.
No, he's above.
I didn't say he had it. I said that's what they were looking at.
He's above Dr. Chow. He was closer than Dr. Chow was. Your boy, the charlatan snake oil online salesman, said anything about internal injuries, or let's slip right by him.
At Pro Football Doc.
Do we not count the tweets that he doesn't send?
A 17-year surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, coming out of surgery yesterday.
Yes.
Take two aspirin and send me a check in the morning.
Took some time to respond to your blatant trolling all day at the guy.
I didn't troll him. His tweets were sent to me. I replied.
This
and then his minions like you,
yes,
who think everything he says is Bible because he's got the letters DR next to his name.
It is not the tumor.
Boy, I mean, that was bold stuff when he said Jamal Charles had an ACL when he went down in a non-contact injury. Boy, that guy's good. I mean, he is good.
Listen, you want to hate, you go ahead and
Ole Mata.
I hope he blocked
might
you.
Be
I hope
bruised,
he's blocked you yesterday.
Might be fractured, but it's not his spine. And apparently, he didn't say anything about internal organs, which Dr. Guy... who went to Penn State for 6 years to become
he has no problems with his
organs degree.
There's no organ problems.
But he was being observed for it,
but
and this
fine.
Dingleberry didn't even come to think that might be something they
was
were looking at.
Was there a problem? No. Again, Chow was right. Checkmark in Dr. Chow's column.
No, checkmark against, because he didn't know what they were looking at, because they didn't know what the guy was complaining about, but he wants to pretend like he's an expert from 3,000 miles away. He's a jackass charlatan. Are you watching, Dr. Chow? You're a jackass charlatan snake oil
he's
salesman.
He's not watching. He's probably blocked our whole show because of you. Again.
One of my favorite Stooges episodes is where they're calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. and they're riding through the hospital in the go-karts. I could just see the three of them and all of a sudden Dr. Chow right behind.
Or Spies Like Us with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. The third Spies Like Us doctor would be Dr. Chow.
Ah!
This guy's a professional, and for whatever reason you want us on to smear him. It's a smear campaign.
Why is he a former trainer?
He's obviously employed somewhere.
Yip-yapping too much about people's injuries to get people to notice him?
Getting this guy on the show.
Good, get him on. I'd love to get him on.
It'd be tremendous.
I would love to get that quack on.
Can I give you guys some Steelers factoids here that may or may not surprise at this point in time? Trying to evaluate this team's a little tough. There are things that really surprise me about where they are in the
stats. Wouldn't you like to see them? Look, there's injuries in football every week. Guys have guys out of the lineup. Wouldn't you like to see them relatively healthy at the key positions for about a month? Just to see what they could really do.
Guy, you love points per game as the stat in football. They are better in points per game on defense than they are on offense.
Yeah.
They're fifth on defense. They're 13th on offense. Just on the surface, does that surprise you, that this profiles as a better defensive team than it does an offensive team at 6-4?
Just on the surface, yes, but not if you look at it.
Because of the injuries?
Well, the bigger surprise is the points against. I mean, the defense has surprised me all year. Frankly, I thought they were going to be a disaster. It's why when we made our picks at the beginning of the season, I picked them to be 8-8 because I thought there was going to be an adjustment period to a new coordinator. I didn't like losing some of the people they lost. I just thought this was going to be a disastrous defensive season. So that's a surprise no matter what else. I'm not surprised at the offensive numbers just because of all they've had to go through.
Okay, to dig further into the defensive side, yes, they're fifth in points per game. However, they're 22nd in yards, 27th in passing yards, and that's not very good. They've also profiled as a good run defensive team, but when I think about them, I think of the Raiders game where they weren't happy. Charkandrick West ran all over them. Justin Forsett ran all over them, and yet somehow they're fifth in rushing yards per game, and they've allowed only three rushing TDs on the year. So I mean, I like these stats. I got to scratch my head. Like,
well, they're a little bit. They're a little bit careful. It's slippery up there.
Dr. Chow is a cure for baldness.
They're a reverse, I think, of what their offense has been in recent years. And I can't sit here and complain that they pile up all this yardage, and you can say they're third in passing, fifth in running, but like 21st in points. How many times did I point numbers like that out last year?
True.
And then when the reverse is true for the defense, complain about it, because that's the important part of the game.
For instance, Big LeBeau's Titans are third in passing yards allowed this year.
Boys,
they're
that
obviously
familiar.
No good.
Where are they in points allowed?
I don't know. Way down.
Okay. The object is to not let the other team score.
You're right.
What worries me a little bit is that there's – and I think the games that they've lost, they haven't created the turnovers or they haven't been as good in the red zone. The red zone defense seems good to me. The turnovers and the sacks have reduced a lot of – okay, the other team has a 9-play, 55-yard drive, and then you either come up with a big sack on third down and knock them out of field goal range, or you create a turnover, and I think that's why those numbers are where they are.
A Dick LeBeau defense that's statistically good but soft when it really matters and helping to get wins and losses. Gosh, I've never had that discussion before.
Well, and the turnovers are up.
Well, the turnovers are up, and that's big. The sacks were up for a while anyway, and that's big. No, and then they're back up again after what happened against the Browns with six. Well, I forget if they – did they statistically give them that last sack or not? They've taken it away. They've given it. They've taken it away.
The team sack for
Yeah, five, six sacks, whatever.
So I've been saying six all week.
I've been saying six all week, but I think technically it was only five. Whatever. Five, six sacks. It was a good pass rush game, and Johnny ran around and tried to keep plays alive as long as he could until he ran into a few. But
they have 9 forced fumbles. That's best in the league, number one in the league. 9 interceptions, 6 most in the league. And that's pretty good. That's what LeBeau's defenses were not consistently providing, except the OA defense and a few others.
You know, one of the great, I think, fallacies about that 2005 through 2010 era Steeler defense that we've been talking about a lot lately, with the reunion happening recently, the defense was really good. Particularly in the first half of that 2010 season when Ben was suspended, that really carried the team. But like in 05, there were a couple of games, and sometimes in 04 too, where the defense never really needed to be tested because, you know, Pittsburgh had 36 minutes of possession time.
Yeah.
You know, remember that when had Deuce and Bettis and Parker that year, and the next year where all three of them combined were on the field at various times, and there were games where the defense was on the field for 22 minutes.
I mean, if you have the ball for 32 minutes, you're usually among the leaders. You know, if you can average a couple more minutes than not.
And this team is not built that same way, especially without Le'Veon Bell back there. This team is more built around the pass game, and thus, you know, because you're passing, you're throwing the ball, there's incompletions, et cetera. You know, the clock slows, and it comes more to a 50-50 game in terms of time of possession, or the Steelers are scoring quickly.
I think in 10 games without LeBeau, what strikes me as being different about this defense, I don't think top to bottom 11 guys, I don't think anybody would argue that they have as good a caliber of players as they did 5 years ago when Paul Amalu was still more in his prime. But I think, you know, the sort of read and react or keep everything in front of you, the bend but don't break mentality, that defense, it worked with those kinds of players. But I think the reason this one's having success without maybe having quite as much talent, there's just more pressure. I mean, you force teams into mistakes because you are having quarterback hurries because you've got a better pass rush. You know, if they had an extra second or two, they might tear this defense apart. And I think when you play a team with a strong offensive line, that neutralizes what these guys are able to do a little bit.
And is that from Hayward to it, or is it a team effort?
It's a team effort, and I think it's partially scheme. I mean, the fact that, you know,
the
guys up for the one-gap, two-gap difference, well, the guys up front are no longer just clogging areas, but are creating, and they've added, when Shazier's been able to play, I think they're much faster than they have been in recent years.
The kudos for the offensive side, here are a couple things they lead the league in, which are surprising to me. Go ahead.
Just real quick, because this was the game I was thinking of from that Super Bowl season. They had the ball for 35 and a half minutes against Cincinnati, in Cincinnati, that game that they won. And that was one game that just leapt to mind where Parker had 131, where I remember them having the ball the whole day.
A regular season game?
Regular season game. And there's a couple more that I'll find. It always seemed to crop up in Cincinnati. They'd hold on the ball for like 35, 40 minutes all the time.
Didn't they have the ball 11 and a half minutes of the first quarter last week against Cleveland? I think they did.
They might have. I just pulled up their time of possession on the year. They're only 24th in the league in TOP, but
right. So the defense is on the field a lot, and that's because they've had a number of drives where, you know, they're going up top to, you know, it's tough to build up time of possession when you get the ball kicked to you and you're 81 yards from the goal line and Landry Jones throws the ball 6 feet in the air and then Antonio Brown takes it 80 for a score, or Martavis takes it 79 for a score like they've done twice.
Well, that's the thing with the offense now. They've had big chunks. How about these stats? 13 runs of 20-plus yards, most in the NFL. 14 pass receptions of 40-plus yards, most in the NFL.
Yeah, it's not your father's team anymore.
They are a big chunk team. And they've only fumbled twice. I think that's really impressive. I think there's another couple teams that are in that boat with them. So, you know, here they are. They're, you know, profiling as a better defensive team than offense, but the offense has certainly been, given the injuries, you got to think, you know, dynamic at times with three quarterbacks. How do you feel about them? SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. And with all those stats, who jumps out at you is like, for those preseason expectations you talked about, Guy, is Keith Butler on your list of like greatest exceeding expectation, greatest overachiever here through 10 games?
Yeah, I think he's done a fantastic job in his first year and proven what the patience of the organization wanting him to take over was a smart idea. I mean, that's all I would say.
How about players? I mean, Landry Jones had zero expectations, so for him to do anything, I think he's probably got to be on your short list.
D'Angelo Williams is on my list. I mean, I don't care what he's done in the past. He's a 32-year-old running back, which is, you know, about the same as having a 91-year-old talk show host. I mean, it doesn't happen that often, and I think he's a big reason why they've been able to succeed through the injuries and suspensions of Le'Veon Bell.
So Keith Butler, D'Angelo Williams, Landry Jones. Top three overachievers? Anybody else that should be on that list?
Top three overachievers. That's
Ross Cockrell, like, you know, some of these. They have
Cody Wallace.
Yeah.
Villanueva.
Those are all, yeah, all the backup.
Mitchell, compared to what we saw last year. I mean, yeah. you forget his personality for a minute.
That's hard to
just
do.
Just what he's done. And I like his personality. I don't have the issue. D'Angelo Williams is a guy that rubs me the wrong way. And I think he's played fantastic. There's just always, you know, there's like Ryan Recker asked him a question yesterday. I told you about him giving him a hard time when he was trying to do the story on his mother and the breast cancer. And then he asked him some innocuous question yesterday. He goes, wow, that's negative.
Well, that's what I mean with his team is likable.
There's always an argument from the guys.
Throw him in there with
a question.
Brown, Bryant, Mitchell, Vic. I mean, this team could be very unlikable if things go poorly in the success column. But we'll take some emails on that here. I just wanted to get a little football fix in to start the program. Who are your biggest overachievers? Your three arrows up, maybe, coming into the bye weekend. We'll talk a little more about the games this weekend that you have to watch. There are a lot of tight
Jacoby
games
Jones,
with the spreads.
Total overachiever.
Yeah, he's on pie on my list. He and Dree.
Boy, Caboldi's gone soft.
Was he? Oh, what was he?
Oh, he's defending Jacoby Jones.
He's basically,
you know, saying that the Steelers still have a chance to catch the Bengals.
Well, they do have a chance to catch the
defending Mike
Bengals.
Mitchell. I mean, that's right. He's subscribing to the Ken Laird theory.
I'm subscribing to the Guy Junker. There's a small hole in the screen
door.
Yeah,
but the more you went over the schedule, the more I listened to Tim. I think that there's duct tape over that hole now.
Well, it's the Bengals. If it wasn't the Bengals and we didn't know the history
if
of their franchise.
If they lose Sunday night, it's going to be a little bit more interesting.
Because you have
the head-to-head game to pull within one. So you got to make up one somewhere else, and that's probably not enough because you're going to lose the tiebreaker. So
that probably is the best game of the weekend, wouldn't you say? Cincinnati at Arizona, the Sunday night game? If you're going to pick one game to watch.
I'll be honest with you. Everybody raves about Arizona. The only time I've watched them play this year was against the Steelers, and I was so thoroughly unimpressed. But
yep.
There's a lot of, you know, national media that's still thinking they're going to be in the Super Bowl from the NFC. So
The Steelers are three games behind the Bengals right now, right?
Correct.
Okay, so the Steelers are three games behind the Bengals, and with six games to go for them and seven games to go for the Bengals.
2.5, and if they lose Sunday, it would be 2.
Well, it depends how you factor the tiebreakers in.
Right now, they don't have the tiebreaker.
Right now, they don't, and it would take almost a miracle to get them.
And of the seven games that they have remaining, three of them are against teams that you're also considering that the Steelers, a lesser team than the Bengals right now, will beat.
And three of the next four Steelers, three of the first four Steeler games out of the chute after the bye are against teams currently leading their division.
That's all logically true, but it's the Bengals.
And two of the other ones are teams with sub-500 records from the NFC West.
Like, would you be surprised
if
the San Jose Sharks don't win the Stanley Cup this year? No, because you've seen the San Jose Sharks. There's something about the DNA of a team.
Okay, but I also think the San Jose Sharks are going to make the playoffs.
Before they have Paul Martin.
And I also think that the Cincinnati Bengals are going to still win the division and then maybe lose in the playoffs. There's a big difference between are the Bengals going to hold on to this massive division lead they've built up and are the Cincinnati Bengals going to get through the AFC to the Super Bowl? Those are totally different questions.
Okay, but we've seen Cincy collapse in many forms and fashions. All I'm saying is this goes a little bit beyond the logic and the
in order for them to collapse to the point that the Steelers are going to catch them, the Steelers are going to have to beat them on the road.
Doable.
The Steelers are going to have to win four other games besides that.
Steelers would have to run the table.
Three other games besides that. The Bengals are going to have to lose to the Rams, Browns, Niners, and Ravens.
Yeah, the Browns is really the tough game that they need to somehow lose, and I just don't
home
see it.
Home for the Ravens in Week 16.
That one, I don't
Week
rule
16
out.
For a two-win team. This is
week
the
17.
Sorry, Week 17 for a two-win team. Yeah, final game. Their 16th game. Come on. You think on January 3rd, the Ravens are going to nut up and take out the Cincinnati Bengals?
No, I don't. I gave
it a
10%
chance. Just put their starting center on IR, too.
SportsTalkAtTripWeb.com.
Packers-Vikings a good game this week, and the Jets-Texans not maybe a great game, but one that's of interest. I mean, those are three games that I'll definitely be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it's not a bad weekend. It's just a bunch of teams that are middling that
even
play
Colts,
each other.
Even Colts-Falcons, if you had... Is Andrew Luck definitely out this week?
Yeah.
This week, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's out for several weeks.
Colts-Falcons game would be much more... Only two definite weeks, though, right? They said like 2-6. It was kind of a big window.
Some were saying 6 is more likely.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Chow said that.
Well, Dr. Chow said it. We know it's true.
You can email the show there. Duffy's Beer presenting the commercial-free Trib Live Radio Morning Show. I want to get some Pirates and Pens talk in here, though, before we get to the Penguins and Mata and the game tonight. Neil Walker is officially on the trade block. Not that we didn't know this was coming.
We do have big Bengal news later, for the record, that we have.
We do?
Yeah, we have big... We'll tease it. We'll set it up. But go ahead. Go
is
to the
it,
Walker.
Is it Jagoff of the Week Andy Dalton related?
Okay. I don't want to give the rest of it away.
I think that's a yes.
They're taking the stripes off the helmets.
Reports yesterday, including those from our Rob Beer Temple, through industry sources. The Pirates are listening to trade offers for Neil Walker and recently had talks with the Baltimore Orioles about the second baseman. Although the sources said the discussions quickly stalled, in part because the Pirates have a high asking price at this stage of the offseason, the Orioles might indeed be seeking an upgrade over incumbent second baseman Jonathan Schoop and Ryan Flaherty. They also have a hole they cannot fill at first base if free agent Chris Davis walks. The Pirates, if they non-tender him at the December 2nd deadline for arbitration, he becomes a free agent and the team will get no compensation if he signs elsewhere. So
they're
obviously
nuts
tender.
If they do that.
Yes.
And they
30.
Should be asking a high price for him.
Supposedly he's in line for a $10 million
if you got to give him away for what you don't want, let him play one more year and let him walk then. If you're just going to get junk for him now.
You would then get a draft pick in return, right? You'd get a compensation pick for Walker if he just left in free agency. Not if you trade him at the deadline, but of course then you could get a package back.
Which is why I say don't take junk for him. I mean, you know, with Kong's situation, I just...
Yeah, that almost makes sense to keep him to the deadline for that point of view, although it's pretty weird if you're a contender and you fancy yourself a contender next year to be trading pieces off the big league roster like him in the middle of the year.
If you're doing well in late July, early August, right.
So what do we make of this? If they're asking prices high, that'll make Pirates fans happy. They're not just giving him away. Is there do you sit here today, more of a chance that he will start the team? Or is this a sign that they're out and shopping him early and eventually he's going to go? They're moving Neil Walker and...
I'm looking at what he said at the after the wild card game at the end of the year. I'm going by Huntington's demeanor when asked about him for over a year now, and I'm looking at what did Rob write that? Did you say or Bill?
Rob Beer Temple. Yep.
Yeah. I think he'll be gone.
Plus, you go and combine this story with the quote that he had yesterday when he said that these things aren't as interconnected as people are making them out to be when we talk about Jung Ho's injury and Neil staying here.
Okay. Well, I don't know how they couldn't be connected, though. You know,
I don't either.
They have to be concerned about Jung Ho's injury.
Right. I don't believe him.
Right.
But he's setting it up. He's greasing the wheels.
But was he in that case, he'd be greasing the wheels to keep Neil Walker, wouldn't he?
No, when he says that they're not as interconnected as people are acting, because the question was phrased, are you more inclined to keep Neil Walker because of Jung Ho's injury? And his response was, these things are not as connected as people make them out to be.
Well, that's ridiculous. They're obviously connected, but maybe they feel like Josh Harrison and, you know, he'll just take over at second, or
but
Alan
who,
Hansen.
Who will play third, though?
Yeah, I don't know. Is Alan Hansen in their plans? Is he really the one guy that might come out of the gates? And
if I'm not mistaken, he wasn't even on the 40-man roster as of last week. They had a lot of space. They had to add some guys. I meant to check on that this week. Josh, did you see anything on that? They had some guys they needed to add to the 40-man to keep from being Rule 5, opening them up to Rule 5 draft.
We also had some closer movement, free agent closers anyway. Joaquin Soria is asking like 3 years and $24 million, $8 million per year to go. And he's not demanding he'll be a closer, but he's demanding pretty good money for it. And the Tigers made a acquisition of K-Rod, who I thought was like done, but apparently they're talking him up as, you know, they Chapman is not moved because the asking price is too high, but the Tigers have gotten K-Rod, and this just all makes me wonder what Melanson's market value is. Is there more of a chance that Melanson will be back than Walker? If you had to put those in order of likelihood to return, Walker, Melanson, Pedro, is Walker the most likely to be shopped, and then better chance that Melanson and Pedro actually just end up coming back here for the last year of their deals?
I still think that Walker is the most likely to stay because there's the most... Well, I take that back. I think Melanson's the most likely to go because they buy their own theory when it comes to how to manage a bullpen.
The bullpen theory, yeah.
I want to say that Walker is the most likely to stay because of what we just outlined, which is there's a specific need for him to start the year and then you can always trade him at or before the trade deadline. But
makes
if
sense,
you just
but
look
just
at
been
it,
so much talk from both sides. As
yeah,
if he's
it's
gone.
Walker because again, if you go back to what was said yesterday by Huntington when he was asked directly what was the most disappointing part of last year, and he said Pedro's ability to play first. I mean, how much more direct can you get? You know, is that bridge officially burned now? And I think the answer is yes. So of those three, I would say that the most likely to stay is Walker.
God, I almost say he's the most likely to go, but I don't think. You can make a case either way for any of them.
There's a need, and the need, unless they think that Alan Hansen is really ready to come up and play second base every day, and Josh Harrison's going to stay at third.
Yeah.
I'll be stunned if any more than one of them is still here. I think all three, there's a good chance they're all gone.
And more, and almost definitely two of the three are gone?
No, I think two of the three will be gone. And I think it's hard to put a... Just based on their attitude about Neil Walker for years, I don't think he'll still be here. And based on saying that it has nothing to do with, to me, with the Gong injury, he was the most likely to still be here in the spring and be a guy. You don't have to wait to the trading deadline. You could trade him, you know, once Gong is back. I mean, there's no guarantee. Gong, you talk about how badly his leg was injured, and he said yesterday he's putting weight on it, but not full weight.
Did you send that video to Joe Torre of his rehab?
Yeah. So... I just think you're really just to say, well, we're going to plug in. How do you say you plug in an Alan Hansen? You won't plug in any of the pitchers that are coming up. There hasn't been any other. Just to say you're going to plug a guy who's had some issues coming up through the system anyway. You think he's all of a sudden mature enough to be your everyday starting second baseman? I don't.
Well, the Brewers traded their closer.
Not even his natural position.
Yeah. What can they get back is what I start to wonder. Like, let's go to Melanson for a second. Milwaukee traded their closer, 34-year-old Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod, who did have 38 saves last year and better numbers than I seemed to. I had this vision of him having a terrible year, maybe just because he was playing in Milwaukee. But they got two minor leaguers for him. They got a minor league infielder, Javier Betancourt, and a player to be named later. I guess we don't know who that is. This minor leaguer hit .263 in Class A. That's not very... It's almost not insignificant. Maybe the player to be named later is something, but that doesn't seem like a very big return for Mark Melanson. So
certainly not if you're going to compare it to what the Red Sox did for Kimbrel.
Yeah, well, they gave a haul for Kimbrel, four good players.
I guess it's going to be somewhere in the middle between these two.
Okay, so if it's in the middle, or if you're...
How old is Kimbrel versus how old is K-Rod?
Kimbrel's young. He's 26.
Yeah, all right. So there you go.
So that's a big deal. And he's signed for 3 more years. I don't know what K-Rod at 34, he's, you know, he may be a one-year guy or something. Melanson's, what, 30? He's not that old. So you think you're right, Tim. It's somewhere in the middle. But does that – what does Huntington want back? Does he need a major league player back in return? Is he going to shop Melanson for a
– I hope so.
For a first baseman?
They have holes to fill. You can't be worrying about the future right now. If you're trading starting parts of – not that Melanson is technically a starter, but he's a guy that's as likely to play every day as anybody.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Alvarez, your leading power hitter with all the warts that he has, and Walker, who's as steady a player as they have. You're talking about getting rid of them. I don't want prospects in return. Not at this stage of the game after 3 straight wild card finishes. You need to plug some of your own holes.
Well, if they're trading Walker to the Orioles, that's not a – they probably would be getting prospects back, right? I mean, the Orioles aren't a – they're kind of in win-now mode, aren't they? They made the playoffs 2 years ago. They're a team that fancies themselves as going for it in a certain sense. So if you're going to trade Walker to them, I would have expected that would have been mostly prospects. I think fans need to brace themselves for that. You're not going to be getting back
maybe
money.
All right, if they're not happy with their second baseman, maybe they trade you who's their starting second baseman?
Jonathan Shoup and Ryan Flaherty.
Well, maybe you trade a starter that you can use for half a season till Hanson's ready or till you get a deal for someone else,
yeah.
And you also get a prospect in return. So I'm not saying you get the answer to all your prayers at first, second, or third, but you get somebody that you could play for a while that's not going to be a minor leaguer that's hitting 172, and you're like, what the hell do we do now?
Right. Well, that's a good point. Now, how would that sell to the fan base if Jonathan Shoup is your starting second baseman on opening day? Neil Walker's been traded.
Trading Neil Walker's not going to sell to the fan base well, period. It's just not. He's too popular.
I mean, that because that's an actual...
The fans, yes. The seam heads, no. The seam heads want Neil Walker out. The seam heads think that Neil Walker doesn't produce
enough
power, think he's overrated, think that he gets a hometown break and escapes criticism because of who he is.
This guy Shoup is 24. He hit .279 last year with 15 homers. It doesn't seem that bad, actually.
I don't know much about him fielding, but...
Low on base percentage, but he's looks like a decent hitter with some
Why do they want to get rid of him?
I don't know. That's a good question. They want to upgrade it. I mean, you know, one thing about Walker, we criticize him here a little bit, or, you know, he's got his warts, but he is a proven commodity, right, as opposed to a 24-year-old, somebody who's just played a couple years in the big leagues. Anyways, we'll love your thoughts on the hot stove, which is starting to heat up a little bit for the Buccos, although we still have a lot of big names unsigned out there. Commercial free here, brought to you by Duffy's Beer, Ben's Junker and Laird. And the Penguins back in action tonight. And back to the Pro Football Doc Olli Maatta story, Tim. 3 to 4 weeks in the end when it all gets fleshed out is the reported time that he's going to be on the shelf.
Didn't see that 3 to 4 week prediction the doctor either.
Well, you hold Chow to a high standard.
Well, I think he holds himself to a high standard if he's such an expert.
What
17 years in the business diagnosing football injuries. I mean, the first thing you should be able to do is figure out how long a hockey guy is going to be out.
I did like your tweet to him that he should start doing this for soccer players when they flop. Tell me if they're really hurt or they're not hurt.
He's such a genius. Let's see you figure out if they're really hurt in the first place.
What do we think about the Maatta? I mean,
quack.
It's good news with Maatta, though, right? I mean,
it's shorter than I thought.
Well, I don't know. Do you feel that way? I mean, or else it could have been a bruised hip. You know, we didn't know what it was. Contrary to what this is exactly the point, Ken. Contrary to what Chow wants us to believe, that you could just look at something and say, hey, this is what it is, and this is where the danger of what he does comes into play. You're like, oh, well, that could have been really bad. Well, how do we didn't know. We didn't know if it was a bad bruise. We didn't know if it was a bruise on his hip that could be gone in a week.
Well, some people aren't as patient and as
you should be
you,
when
Tim,
it comes to medicine.
Okay.
You should be. That's the point. So, I mean, I don't know how to feel about Olli Maatta because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if it was a bruise. I didn't know if it was a break. I didn't know if he had ruptured his spleen.
Well, when the guy gets carted out on a stretcher and is in the hospital, I start thinking the worst, like could be out for the year. I mean, maybe that's my negativity. I start thinking this could be it for him for the season. So for him to be back in a month, I find it to be...
I don't trust anything about this injury right now because so little has been said, and when you call what happened to him an upper body injury, they're obviously trying to hide something. Hmm. Like, how upper are we? You say upper body in sports, and you basically mean from below the pec up. Or sorry, from the pec up, right?
Yeah, this should be a mid-body.
But they did say soft tissue, too, right?
A soft tissue? What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
He could have a maybe as a torn bicep or a, you know.
Yeah, maybe torn bicep. I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's something. But that's not a 5 week. Not Dr. Chow, know that a torn bicep is not a 4 week injury. See? I didn't need my degree to figure that out.
I could ask Chow if he hadn't blocked us all now, you know, what a soft tissue injury meant, but you've ruined him for us all.
Well, you're kissy-kissy with him, for what I could tell.
Yeah, I enjoy his work, yes.
So you're kissy-kissy with him, ask him.
I think he won't speak to me now. He's so offended at your trolling for the last 24 hours.
Well, when you go see him about that inflammation in your pelvic region, you know,
hey.
Is this a rash?
Since you sit on his sacral and whisper sweet nothings into his ear.
Oh, God, you tarnish even the sacral. Penguins back in action tonight against the Avs.
Well, all right, so you cut off your thought there. So I cut off your thought. Where were you trying to go with Mata? Like, what does this mean for how they're going to replace him on the defense?
Well, they're not bringing up Pouliot. I don't get this. Why is Pouliot not the obvious?
Well, I think whoever comes up is going to sit unless another guy gets hurt, and they don't want him to sit. He's playing well right now. So they brought up a 5'9" guy to further bolster their toughness.
Exactly.
No, I think that's it in a nutshell, Ken. The guy's not going to play. I mean, look how long it took Clendenning to get in second game in. You know, I think he'll go with Clendenning. And he was effusive in his praise of Clendenning the other night. So,
but this was such, as Tim, you pointed out yesterday, Pouliot was such an important piece. You weren't offering him in trades in the offseason.
He was off the table for Brandon Sutter.
I don't know that changes their thinking on that, Ken. I mean, he's got, he's got like 3 goals and 12 assists. Does that sound right? I mean, he's...
Pouliot's minor league numbers?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I think he's on a little bit of a roll right now, and they want to keep him there rather than come up here and sit or come up here and play in games. And, you know, they mentioned the word confidence. These guys aren't as fragile as people make them out to be.
And here's where the teams aren't as smart as we make them out to be. Because let me ask you this question. How much do you think Chris Letang played a major role in that power play working the way it did?
I don't know.
Or was that more the wizardry of Malkin?
It seemed like they finally got a guy in the middle. Are you talking about the Bennett goal?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for sure. Malkin's wizardry. It clicked. I don't think Letang is a key for them on the power play.
Exactly.
No.
All right, so that's where I'm going with this. They scored 2 power play goals against Minnesota that were mainly, in my opinion anyway, things having other to do with what Chris Letang did on the unit.
Agreed.
Yet, they were, 0-13 going into that game, and the power play was the single biggest talking point for why they were failing on offense leading into that contest against the Minnesota Wild. If they had managed to go 0-for-whatever that night and still beat the Wild 2-1, you think Derek Pouliot is the guy coming up or not?
I would
Derek
think so.
Pouliot would be the guy coming up.
Because he ran
so
this guy's
they
power
scored
play.
2 power plays that had nothing to do, really, with Chris Letang being the reason why they scored the goals. But now they think the power play is good enough so they don't have to bring Pouliot up.
Okay, but Rutherford has assessed this team, and he has admitted it's not looking the way he is comfortable with or totally likes. You would think Pouliot is an answer for their schematic problems in 5-on-5, too. A good puck-moving defenseman, a good young player who might spark the offense for them a little bit. Isn't Pouliot's value beyond just a power play quarterback? It would seem to me he's the guy that is the internal fix for what's ailing them. At least on nights when they're not scoring 4. I mean, everything was fine Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm not I tend to think more along your lines, Ken, but I'm just explaining what I think their thinking is.
Give Clendenning a shot for now.
Yeah, and they were happy with the way he played the other night. And because Pouliot is playing the way they want him to, keep him playing the way they want him to, and, you know, let him build up some confidence.
The Simone Dupre treatment.
Simone Dupre up and play him 2 minutes and then yell at him all the next practice.
Hey, they see him, and I don't. I mean, I'll admit that. I haven't watched him a lick in Wilkes-Barre. Maybe he's a mess defensively. He definitely had his flaws last year, but that's a little frustrating. Is just if not now, when? You know what I mean? If you got a guy gone for a month, where's Pouliot?
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. That's what I was saying about the power play. Like, the... But you know who Dupre reminds me of, since we just talked about him a couple times? Dupre is to the Penguins what Max Starks was for a long time with the Steelers. You know, they drafted him, they used him, he was okay.
They keep wanting to throw him away, and they keep needing him.
Yeah, exactly. And then they
it's
got,
like going back over to the garbage can. Like, ah, I think I need that. And you uncrumple the paper and you save it.
That's who he was for.
Yeah,
his
but they didn't
statement.
Trade Max Starks and then say we made a mistake by trading him. Like
yes,
weeks
they
after.
Did because they let him go and then they brought him back in week 9 of the Super Bowl season.
That's well, I guess.
That's exactly what they did.
You know, I was looking at Max Starks. Josh, I was looking at Max Starks being interviewed at the reunion last week, and he looks like you. I never thought of that before.
Oh, there's the old, yeah.
Because I didn't know you when he was playing here, and it's the first time like the two of you have been.
It's the mustache.
It is the mustache.
I hear that on average about once a week.
Do you?
My first six
You ever get
weeks,
asked for an autograph?
No, not yet. I'm
like
too
Andrew
short.
Stocky?
You didn't think of Tony Dorsett?
No one gets as many autograph offers as Andrew Stocky. My first six weeks at WTAE, Marcy Cipriani called me Max Starks because she never remembered my name, but she said I look like Max Starks, and that's what she called me for my first 2 months at Channel 4.
Also, we had yesterday in the
Just
hockey world.
Just don't start looking like Trey Essex. I don't know how they got Trey onto that photo platform.
Trey was a good guy. 44-year-old head coach Guy Boucher news yesterday in the hockey world. We found out where he was coaching and now where he's no longer coaching. Because guys, we were saying, where is he? He was in the Swiss League for SC Bern, and they fired him yesterday.
Wow.
However,
let's get the guy that the Swiss League doesn't want anymore.
There's more to the story. As Darren Dreger was pointing out, they offered Boucher a contract extension before the year began. He turned it down because he wanted an out clause to get back into the NHL after a year.
Mm.
Last week, they offered him a contract extension. He turned it down again, demanding an out clause for the NHL. Then they lost 4 in a row. Then they fired him. So there's some degree of he wasn't getting the job done, and there's some degree of they're moving on with in a new direction because he wants out anyway.
Rutherford says he hasn't given it any thought to firing Johnston.
Well, would he say it if they've – I mean, you can't say that. As a GM, no. You cannot say we've given some thought to firing our coach ever under any circumstance.
I think he can.
Well, okay.
You could say Pedro's your biggest disappointment.
Rutherford is pretty honest, isn't he? I mean, he does
pretty much. Almost to a fault.
Yeah.
Give him two warm like cookies and he'll tell you anything.
We regret trading away Simone Dupre.
Ask Rossi. He's honest to a push-you-in-the-elevator fault. But here he's available. This is the former head coach of Sidney Crosby in the Quebec Major Junior League, and he has some NHL head coaching experience. Is this now the favorite in the clubhouse? If Johnston gets whacked.
So if they hire Guy Boucher, is the first thing that Guy Boucher says to Sid, hey, Sid, remember when you used to listen to coaching? Let's go back to that.
I really like this guy. He was the coach when they beat the Penguins in the 2011 playoffs. I just like the scar. I like the way he carries
himself.
Yeah.
You're sucked in by the visual.
I like his first name.
Yeah, well,
it was a great quote.
Very good quote. He's more entertaining for our line of business.
Yes, he is.
His 3 years in Tampa, after they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals that 2011 year, they missed the playoffs, and then he got whacked after a 13-17-1 start in 2013. He's also worked a little bit with Tocchet, right? Because I think Tocchet was on his staff when he took over. So I don't know whether he would stay or go in that scenario. I'm intrigued, though. Put him as my favorite in the clubhouse, ahead of Jacques Martin and ahead of Mike Sullivan. At least my wish list of replacements.
A very offensive-oriented coach. Just because he had Stamkos, and Stamkos happened to score, they were not known for being an offensively-oriented team.
Well, I've seen this team, and it's as lacking offense
like
as you
trapped,
can get.
Ken.
At this point, you as the coach might give me hope.
The Lightning used to trap. I don't know what he's doing in the Swiss lead, but the Lightning used to trap.
If it works, it works. You know, Michel Therrien traps a lot. They score a lot of goals.
But if we're arguing that the system is the reason why these guys are struggling so much as we have, what is the system going to be when Guy Boucher gets here?
I don't know his system.
He traps!
Okay. Well, this team is more packet in defensively than trapping in the neutral zone, right? This team that we're watching now is five guys around the house.
Okay, so it's going to be hard, again, system-wise, for them to score.
I don't know that. I don't know. The guy's not, I mean, maybe he's changed, too, in his couple years overseas.
He may change based on the personnel that he has, too, and you may come in here and look at this team and think that trapping's not the way to go with him, but I think we're kind of whistling up the wrong road here anyway.
Okay.
I think Johnson's here for a while.
I think this is a signature talk show moment. We'll look back on it someday and think.
They're not going to pay him for 2 years.
That was the time when Laird got it right.
Remember he never liked to talk about that scar? He never talks about why he got it or how he got it. I wonder if Dr. Chow might know. I wonder if he can lend a speculation.
You are obsessed.
He was in a minor league, or was it maybe he was even in an NHL game, right?
Oh, it was?
I think he took a stick, yeah.
Yeah, he just doesn't talk about it.
Shark bite. Mark B. first in today on the mail. At the bye week, guys, the Steelers, I think, are okay. They're in a good position. They should have won more games despite the injuries and circumstances during the games they lost. But I do think the offense is going to be good. I think they could beat New England if they had Le'Veon Bell. Then they could keep up with them. If they go to the playoffs, I think most of the teams, though, will torch this defense, although they played well against Cincinnati. One thing that I found interesting from the roundtable, they pointed out, Chris Adansky did, they've played a lot of the top offenses in football right now. I think he said 5 of the top 10 passing offenses they've faced.
San Diego had great numbers when they went there. I mean, they still only have 2 wins, though. I think it. Who else would you say is great? Cincinnati and New England? That's about it. Well, I guess Carr's. Yeah.
Yeah, the Oakland passing offense.
I still don't think they got
there.
A big, great signature win.
Oakland
that's
passed
my
off, all, just passed all over
you
them.
Mocking
for me?
Me
to really that just came out. If they it did just come out. I wasn't even thinking of that. I would feel better about their overall prospects had they had a win against Cincinnati. Had they had a win against New England. Had they had a win, you know. Everybody points to Arizona. I just don't think Arizona's as good as everybody thinks they are.
Is it
and
fair
I
to
said that when they were here. I picked them to win that game. Groth told me I was the only guy on the pregame show to pick them, and I think they're flawed and have built their record on smoke and mirror wins against stinky teams.
Who?
The Cardinals.
Oh, Arizona. Well, and they just beat Seattle last week, so I don't know what that tells you about your thoughts on Seattle next, but
no, I think Seattle's very beatable. I just don't think they are at home. Not
Arizona won up
even
there.
Another 2-2.
That game was in Seattle.
I'm talking about the Steelers matching up with them up there. For Arizona, that's going to, you know, St. Louis for the Steelers.
Okay. In terms of passing yards, here are your passing. In terms of passing yards, New Orleans, San Diego, New England, Arizona, the Giants, and Cleveland.
Somehow Cleveland's in there. So that's
non-playoff, Patriots, Cardinals, 5-5 division leader in the Giants. Cleveland.
So the Cardinals and the Browns are 2 of those top passing teams, in quotes, that the Steelers have played.
Cardinals, yeah. Browns are better at passing gas than passing yards.
Okay, so that's a little bit hokey. Also, the guys were pointing out, though, this is weird. They are 5-0 when they've allowed 300 passing yards, the Steelers. But they are 1-4 when they're holding opposing quarterbacks under 300
that
yards.
That goes into John Tigerwald's old theory. If you throw over 300 yards, you're going to lose.
Ben Roethlisberger stat.
Of course, Brady must not have thrown for 300 in that scenario, but
yeah, I don't know.
He obviously was effective.
Well, Brady doesn't throw for 300 a lot. I mean, Brady oftentimes throws for like 286 and wins. Mm.
Finally, Mark says, Mitchell and Brown are unlikable. They are douches, but other than Brown bitching on the field and doing a flip, you can't argue with his production. Thanks for the email, Mark.
It gets a little strong.
Paul says he's out in Denver. Paul is our Denver correspondent. I'm a bit out of the loop perhaps out here, guys, but before the season started, I was thinking maybe 6-10 for the Steelers. We were thinking they'd score a good amount of points, but I was expecting the defense to really suck. How blind are people if they were thinking they'd be better off than 6-4 at this point? That's probably fair, right? I think before the year...
At what point, when you say this point, at what point are we talking about this point? At what point were we predicting this point? When everybody was happy? When Le'Veon Bell was not hurt? When Martavis Bryant was back? Okay, what part of the preseason? Before Pouncey got hurt or not?
Well, that's a good point. Right before the season started, when you knew Bell was going to be out, you knew Bryant was going to be out, the expectations...
And before Pouncey got injured.
When was Pouncey... Yeah, yes, before Pouncey got hurt.
Okay, Pouncey got hurt in the Packer game, the Packer preseason game.
Okay, no after that then. He got hurt in preseason?
Yes, Pouncey got hurt.
He didn't play one snap, okay.
Same game, Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, right as before the kickoff in New England. What were you thinking about this team?
8-8.
Before the kickoff in New England, I was saying 9-7.
6-4, though, you could have still thought 9-7. I mean, looking at the schedule before the year, it was backloaded.
Right, so I don't think that's exactly true.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I'm with Tim on this one, Paul. I think 6-4 would have been a pretty realistic expectation for the first 10 games of the schedule. Sam says, Dr. Chow is not professional. Doctors don't diagnose things via Twitter, period.
Exactly.
Well, come on. I mean, this guy's not trying to make a living by diagnosing things. He's just providing a form of entertainment.
Thank you.
A little bit of early news on injuries that he knows a little bit by looking at it than we do.
Anybody who's offended by this has medical people in their family, and they're personally offended that this guy is doing something that they thought they and their family could have made money on.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's my theory.
No, I think part of what it is, you're partially right in that I don't like to be, and having done play-by-play before and having, you know, being in the press box. So if Jordy Nelson, when Jordy Nelson had his ACL, the first thing that I thought when I saw that was ACL. I tweet that out, and it's, who are you to speculate on injuries? You're not a doctor. Well, I know what a non-contact knee injury looks like. He's doing the same thing.
Yes, so, like, but if he has a degree.
But if you're casting a certain onus and responsibility on a person to live up to something based on you shouldn't know until it's diagnosed and don't put blind speculation out there, if you're not the one examining him, I don't care if you're a doctor or not, you're doing the same damn thing.
We had a big back and forth for people who missed this yesterday on Twitter.
Tim, if you put it out there on Twitter, I would take it with a grain of salt, but I would also know that you're knowledgeable. Well, first of all, you got medical people in your family, but you've been watching sports for years. I mean, we all have a little bit more of a feel for when something happens, you know, as to what the injury is. So, you know, I mean, and if you tweeted out, I wouldn't be a person. If I'm sitting there and someone tweets out that looks like it could be an ACL, I'll be like, how the hell do you? I wouldn't be one of those people. Like, well, that's interesting. We'll wait and see. What I hate is, I hate when someone gets hurt. My life is miserable for 4 days at the TV station because they, how's Ben? How's Ben's knee? What's up with Ben? They're not telling you. I mean, when immediately after the game, Mike Tomlin says, I'll have more the next time we get together, which means Tuesday at noon. So don't make me, for 48 hours, be trying to find out what's wrong with his knee. I'm not Adam Schefter.
See, Tim, you should be mad at these people who drive the need for guys like Dr.
So I kind of like a little
mad
bit of information.
Mad at TV news directors? Boy, I've never been mad at those guys before.
Wait till Guy has Chow on the phone after a major injury to diagnose what could or might not have happened. You are going to blow your top.
Let me amend something I said earlier about Brady. Brady so far has had 3 games under 300, 286, 275, 299. He's been over 300 every other game. So, yeah, there have been games where he's been under 300, but he's been – let me amend that. So he has had bigger raw yardage games than I thought. I was actually trying to give him more credit by saying that. He's just wildly efficient.
Tim had tweeted at Dr. Chow yesterday, so what sports injuries do you find to be the most difficult to blindly guess at and diagnose from your couch?
Apparently it's hockey.
To which Chow said, the better the video, the better the impression. It's hard to interpret when no clear injury mechanism seen. But since my opinions are mostly traumatic and video-based, they work better with the NFL, worse with baseball, and less traumatic.
I thought that was pretty traumatic when Olimata went back first into the open door after being cross-checked from behind, you jackass.
To which,
go ahead and tell Olimata that wasn't traumatic.
To which Benz responded with his usual venom and hatred yesterday. Let's see, because this goes back. Let's see. Cool. I want to check his prediction of injury with half-week spreads moving forward.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, this was after his...
Let's do the Mike Barker half-week spread on every injury that Dr. Chow predicts.
Because Chow said, I'm better at it basically than pundits who try to pick games, which is a good point, given your pick and
forth.
You
know what? No, I guarantee you, if we do 10 injuries from the NFL this week, give me 10 injuries, I'll tell you closer to how long that guy will be out than anybody will do picking against the spread. It's easier to do.
Anyway, this went back and forth.
I'm pretty good at both. I got the internal organs and I'm in first place.
Dr. Chow said,
the hell I can figure out the stock market.
Just finished a big day of surgery and patients. Seeing these tweets now, quite amusing. I responded with support. Love your analysis, Doc. Don't let Ben's bring you down. Haters going to hate.
Who said that?
Me.
Me. He said that about me.
You're just trying to stay unblocked.
Yes. and on we went here this morning. Doug tweets in, the Orioles are not going to get rid of Jonathan Schoop, their second baseman, guys. They still have high hopes for him. I think if they traded for Neil Walker, he would roam between first, second, and third as a platoon guy for them. Boy, that'd be interesting. But But if Beer Temple's right and the Orioles want to upgrade their second baseman, why would you bring Neil Walker in with a trade?
Well, that's
and then
why
not play
we discussed it to begin with. I don't know what the Orioles' thoughts are, nor do I much care about them. But in the Rob reporting, they're trying to upgrade him. So you figured if they want Neil Walker to upgrade him, he might be able to come here in return.
Mm-hmm. Ryan on the email, here's what seems different about the Steelers to me, guys. But the Penguins. It is the Steelers. He's got Steelers and Penguins thoughts in here. Sorry, Ryan. No stats. This team seems to be more effective to the Steelers in getting stops with blitzes and turnovers, while the offense seems to be better at converting red zone chances. Still disproportionate to yardage, but better. And the defense seems to be more solid when they're playing a system with everybody in the right place. If I had to explain it in a number, it would be 43. Is there some truth to that? Are they more structurally sound without Troy?
Yes.
Freelancing.
They are, especially when a guy that was trying to freelance couldn't freelance and do it effectively.
Yeah, it's probably a good point.
Which is something I've been saying about Polamalu for a couple of years and no one wanted to hear it.
Well, the other thing, when Ryan Clark was in his prime, he was very good at compensating for that. It took a certain player to compliment him on his roving days, and every other safety couldn't do that. And once he got a little bit older and couldn't compensate,
I'll admit I was
worse.
Wrong on that. I thought he would have been better this year than Will Allen and whatever other parts, Shamarco, they put in. But I'm wrong. Will Allen has been good. And Ryan's right. They've been more fundamentally together.
Part of the problem with talking about that defense last year was everybody wanted to be mad at the defense, but nobody wanted to be mad at Troy and LeBeau.
That's a good point.
So let's just blame Mike for everything.
Ryan says, P.S., any chance we get a second assist from Golden Boy Crosby tonight, or is Rossi going to praise his effort tomorrow? Which is odd because...
Oh, now Rossi is
too complimentary of Sid.
Oh,
come on,
oh,
Ryan.
Oh, okay.
By the way, both of his assists against Montreal last week were primary assists.
Sid played well Tuesday, didn't he? Wouldn't you say he played well?
I did find it funny, though.
He had a lot of jump, yep.
That Mike Johnston felt the immediate need to point
praise
that
him, yeah.
Yeah, well, the question was about Gino, who had a 4-point night and might have had the single most dominant game in hockey this year for any one given player.
That is interesting.
And the first thing he said was, boy, Sid had a lot of jump tonight, even though the stat sheet doesn't show it. What's that tell you about the way the coach is thinking?
Do you blame him? If you were the coach of the Penguins,
I probably would have done something like that too, and it's unfortunate that he has to feel the need to do it.
Sean emails the show. He says, in terms of expectation exceeders, guys, give my props to Bud Dupree. I think he's been their most consistent pass rusher for the entire season as it's gone along, especially after Harrison has fallen off a bit. Considering how poorly Jarvis Jones has been playing after 3 years, Dupree seems to be already better after just 10 games. That's a nice surprise when we hear how hard it is for rookies to come in and perform on the defense.
Yeah, I thought Bud was actually a little bit better earlier in the season, to be frank. I thought he got off to a faster start than he has been playing well of late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't know about the best, but I think he's, you know, for a rookie season, I think he's done very well.
Especially if you want to talk preseason. He got into a fight with his teammates in the preseason.
He's
been
good ever since.
Yeah, I'm thinking this guy's going to be a mess.
He lost his temper one time, and, you know, I think it's looking like a good pick at the moment.
From Matt, he emails.
By the way, talking about the Steelers, I'm just looking about this. We're talking about first half schedule versus second half, or not exactly half, but first pre-bye. The records of the teams they played till now is 45-46. The record of the teams they'll play the rest of the way is 27-28. Virtually the same, a game under 500.
That's an Alabama schedule.
Alabama's got the third hardest schedule in the country.
Oh, my God.
That was just an SEC.
Oh, jeez.
It's a Pitt schedule. It's a Northeastern schedule. It's a Penn State schedule. Pitt schedule's harder than Penn State's.
Whoa, how about that?
Oh, it is.
Put that one down.
Are you counting the Big Ten in that? Or you're just
watershed moment of the show.
It may even out. Of course, they had to play an Iowa team to have it jacked up. But
what's wrong with playing Iowa?
That may even out some after they play Michigan and Michigan State, and Pitt plays Louisville and Miami. But to this point, Pitt's schedule is definitely tougher.
You had to just tarnish a good moment.
Seen who
with
Louisville's
your Penn
play?
State bias.
Seen who Louisville's schedule's been?
No, they've been good. You feeling the Cardinal? Cardinal singular?
Picking pork coming up around the corner. Well, they're not the singular Cardinal. They're Cardinals, aren't
they're
they?
Cardinals,
they started with
Stanford
Auburn, Houston, and Clemson were their first three games. That's not too bad.
Oh.
Okay.
It's been crap since.
You feel good about that pizza. That's fine. Matt emails the show, if the Pirates trade Neil Walker, guys, they better get major league players in exchange. I don't care about a draft pick we won't see until 5 or 6 years from now. As a fan, I want them to focus on the now and how they can win a World Series now rather than focus on the future. They should just keep Walker because they're not going to get a better second baseman than him, and that includes Jay Hay. It's a one-year view of it.
I like Jay Hay at third better myself than second.
That's a tough thing. If
prefer Jay Hay at second because third is where you tend to find more guys that produce power. It's hard to find a second baseman with much power.
Well, in the situation they've had, Walker provides the power third baseman would, and Jay Hay.
Yes.
But I don't care where the home runs come from. It doesn't matter by positional.
It's easier to find a bigger guy that swings a bigger bat at third base.
I'm just talking about defensively. I don't think he's great on the pivot.
If they trade Walker for the centerpiece being a pitcher, a starting pitcher, a Charlie Morton type, is that reasonable for a guy that would maybe be with you 5 or 6 years? You've got an internal replacement in Hanson coming up.
A middle-of-the-road starter is what you're saying. Saying a Charlie Morton type, I think, is a negative to most Pirate fans.
Okay. What 5 or 6 year fourth starter are you going to get for Neil Walker that's going to cost you less than what you're going to sign Jay Happ for?
Well, I'm hoping they still get Happ, but...
Okay, so you want to find an affordable guy that's locked up for 5 to 6 years in inner rotation as a fourth guy.
Well, based on
Is that? There's nobody like that.
Well, I'm talking about like a AAA guy banging on the door, a high-profile prospect in the Orioles system. I don't know their
system. Another Tyler Glasnow who they already have and they're afraid to bring up.
Well, they're not going to go for – yeah, we're not going to get a Glasnow prospect, but a Kingham type, like somebody of that ilk, I don't know. Maybe two
of
those.
So they'll rush somebody else's prospect, but they won't put the accelerator down on their own?
I'm not saying for this year. I'm just saying in general. This is what you're going to get for Walker. Does it make sense as a GM? If you're going to trade this guy, you're going to get...
I don't think they need another one of those.
You don't think they need starters?
I don't think they need another one of those right now when they've got three already. Plus Gerrit Cole locked up for a while.
I'll tell you what I'm really worried about. If Pedro and Walker are both gone from this team, their home runs keep – they have no power at all.
None.
Right.
This is a pop gun lot, depending on who they get in return. I mean, Walker may be a poor man's power hitter, but he's still – it's more home runs certainly than the average middle infielder. And on this team, he's, one of the top three power hitters. Hmm. Is Marte ever going to hit 30? I don't – maybe somewhere. I don't know, but I doubt it.
Yeah, which gets back to, by the way, Freddie Freeman. Those rumors have been squelched by the Braves. They said they're not trading Freddie Freeman, point blank, period. So,
of course, you don't know what their motivation is either. I mean,
that's true.
I believe a tenth of what I read at this time of the year.
You're a smart man, legend. All right, that's a commercial-free hour plus here on the program this morning. We're brought to you by Duffy's Beer in Pleasant Hills. They are your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, home brewing supplies, all your party and tailgating needs for the weekend's games, Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com and Tim Benz Vapes. Coming up on the show, a little basketball talk. We'll get back into the football discussion in about a half an hour. Brandon Knight is going to call in and join the show, and we'll talk a little Pitt hoops, but we'll also give equal opportunity Penn State hoops. Patrick Chambers, the head coach of the Knits, as they're playing the Duquesne Dukes this weekend, will be on the program. No Duquesne. We'll talk about how Penn State will run them out of the gym, Josh.
Is that this Friday or is that the day after Thanksgiving?
This Friday.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
It's coming up.
I thought it was next week.
And why you're going to have to rescind your Jag Off of the Week vote and the winner.
This is what you were teasing earlier in the show.
Yes.
Big development in the Jag Off of the Week front, in the Cincinnati Bengals front. All right, we'll get to that. Also, maybe a little snippet of my conversation with Pitt's Michael Young. Our college hoops talk on the way next. Ben's Junker and Laird, TribLive.com.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at Duffy'sBeer.com. Bud, Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans, only $18.99. Plus Miller Lite and Yingling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.
Mel's Pizzeria, Restaurant, and Bar, the best pizza in Katanning.
dine-in, takeout, and delivery. American food, traditional pizza, plus 14 specialty pizzas, variety of six-pack beer selections, 20 beers on tap. Mel's Pizzeria is a proud sponsor of YMCA Youth Sports, Indiana County Youth Baseball, Frontier Team at Kings Lanes, and proud supporter of other youth organizations in the area. Mel's Pizzeria, located at 353 Butler Road in Kittanning. Call 724-543-1010. Online at melspizzeria.com.